right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. We're going to take a look at what the temperature is here. It's actually sunny again and blue sky, which, you know what? We had an entire winter of overcast and gray, so I'm happy. And it's 24 degrees today, so a little bit of a heat wave over yesterday. We're like 5 degrees more. Woohoo. Actually, more. I think yesterday was like 17. So, yeah, I had heard, and we'll see if we ever get there, but they are predicting tomorrow should be in the 50s with rain. So that will be our one day of spring. And then it's going to get cold again, and it'll be another week before we see above freezing. So should be quite interesting. All right, so where do we kick it off today? Yesterday, we talked about the microbiome and dogs. We mentioned the crazy cat one too, passing on bacteria to your host and taking over their brains. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of stuff I'd like to look at today that we didn't get to look at yesterday. So let's just flip through and see what we have to pick from. Actually, yes, there were quite a number of things. There was a story I ran across. Actually, there were a few stories a few days ago, and this was over the weekend. And we're going to do some brain stuff today. Let's take a look at this. So there's a story out of ScienceAlert.au. Actually, it looks like they have ScienceAlert.com. They used to be ScienceAlert.au. It was an Australian science publication, like a Discover magazine. And the story read, "Scientists have found a drug that makes people more compassionate." Wow. I mean, we've bred the society of psychopaths, right? I think we've pretty much established that. Society has bred us an entire generation of psychopaths with no empathy, no compassion, me, 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 narcissistic, central, I don't care about anything but me, society. But we have a drug now to fix you. Wow, sounds like a large military helicopter flying over. You hear that? All right, so let's check the story out. Scientists have found a drug that make people more compassionate. Of course, this is the Brain Project that is helping this right along, as we can tell which drugs cause different areas of the brain to light up. Then we'll be able to put it into DSM-5 as another disorder that we can treat you with Big Pharma with. All right, as it turns out, altering people's brain chemistry can stop them from being selfish jerks. Ha 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 ha. You shouldn't be laughing. Altering people's brain chemistry is the part of that sentence that bothers me, not the being selfish jerks part. I can deal with selfish jerks pretty well. Researchers have created a drug that makes people more sensitive to inequality, more likely to share resources, and generally more compassionate. In other words, it makes them kinder. And the potential is already blowing my selfish little brain. The drug called Tola, not mine, but this guy's, the drug called Tolcapone, like an Al Capone, called Tolcapone, prolongs the effect of dopamine in the prefrontal cortex of the brain, a region involved in the regulation of complex thought and our emotions. Yeah, and what's really interesting is that the dopamine regulation is also what gets hijacked when they get you sucked into the video games. You know, we are lab rats, people. Have you not realized that yet? That as they're, and especially now, I mean, we've always been, but way more now, as they know the exact chemical effects that different things are going to have on our bodies. So they're manipulating this reward center, right? That's also the addiction center. That's the dangling carrot center, is the dopamine center. And of course, it makes you happy when you've generated dopamine. That's your success chemical. That's the chemical when you've done something great, when you've accomplished a project, you start producing dopamine. Or when you've killed the monsters in your first-person shooter video game. So, all right, let's read a little bit more. La, 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 la. So the drug called tolcapone prolongs the effects of dopamine in the prefrontal cortex of the brain, a region involved in the regulation of complex thought and our emotions. What a great section of the brain to hijack, by the way. Complex thoughts and emotions. Get rid of both of those, and you have a society that's dumbed down and will do whatever you want without feeling bad about it. And early tests suggest that it encourages people who take it to be more fair-minded when it comes to money. Well, if Now, I thought there was an experiment like this that they did on like bankers. Remember, bankers came out being the ones who didn't share the most. And I mean, think about it. When you're happy and you feel contented, especially like if you just won a big lottery or something, or you're rolling in dough. Hey, what's handing $20 to the clerk at the store because they gave you great service, and so you felt overly generous to give them a big tip. You know what I mean? Like you've been there. Have you ever won a lottery ticket or something? You know, and you always feel like just so giving, and you instead of giving, you know, you probably wouldn't give anyone anything if you hadn't won the lottery ticket, because who has all kinds of extra money to be handing out? But you know, if you won extra money and be like, hey, here, you know what? That was just such great service. Here, take 20, go get yourself, you know, a beer or whatever. I know I've had that feeling before. It's usually with like winnings of some kind. All right. The researchers have published their findings in Current Biology and hope that the drug could provide insight into how disorders such as schizophrenia or addiction are regulated. Our hope is that the medications targeting the social function may someday be used to treat these disabling conditions, said one of the study's leaders, Andrew Kaiser, from the University of California, San Francisco. The team gave 35 participants either tolcapone or a placebo across two separate visits. Tolcapone is already approved by the FDA for treatment of Parkinson's disease and changes the neurochemistry of the brain by prolonging the effect of dopamine, the hormone associated with reward and motivation in the prefrontal cortex. The participants were then given a simple economic game to play where they divided money between themselves and an anonymous recipient. Is this new? Because I swear this study, we read about this study like almost 2 years ago. Maybe they've found out more now. They've been doing research about this for a long time, though, to find out who would be more giving. And it ends up that the bankers are the least. Like, couldn't we have figured that one out? Those who had been given tolcapone ended up splitting the money with the strangers in a fairer way than those who had taken a placebo, the research revealed. We typically think of fair-mindedness as a stable characteristic, part of one's personality, said a researcher. But our study doesn't reject this notion, but it shows how that a trait can be systematically affected by targeting specific neurochemical pathways in the human brain. The researchers then use computational modeling to investigate what seems to be driving tolcapone takers to give more money to a stranger, and found that under the drug's influence, players were more sensitive to and tolerant of social inequality. Oh God. We do not have some bleeding heart lefty liberals behind this experiment, do we? To make us more tolerant? I mean, think about Like all the craziness that's going on in our society right now, right? And all of the boo-hoos coming from all the different corners about they called me names. Oh, God. When did we turn into such a bunch of pussies? Can I ask you that? Like, do you remember that saying, sticks and stones can break your bones, but names will never hurt you? Don't think that I didn't get called lots of names when I was growing up. I had a funny name. And I know it hurts your feelings, but hey, guess what? Shit doesn't faze me anymore. You learn to like let it roll off when you get picked on, and you stop being a big baby about it. And that's what I can't stand about the way they're teaching them now. It's like everybody has to win a prize and everybody has to be the same. Everybody needs to be included. And I mean, it's nice. You don't want to exclude children, but I have to tell you. Nobody ever wanted me to be their gym partner. I mean, I can be athletic if I want to. I really didn't like it at the time. And I wasn't really good in sports is because I have an astigmatism, which we find out now. But when I was a kid, I didn't know, and it's really hard to aim when one eye is much stronger than the other. And you know what? They used to hurt my feelings. And I had really super skinny ankles. They used to call me chicken legs. And you know what? They really hurt my feelings. But again, nothing really fazes me much now. I mean, yeah, I got a couple chinks in the armor, but most of them don't bother me. And you know what? Polish jokes don't bother me. It just, when I see how freaking politically correct this world is, and now this whole thing, oh my God, whatever that gym was with the, Jim was a Pigman hit a video about it. About men deciding that they identify more with women and want to be able to use the women's locker room at the gym. And then that woman gets kicked out of the gym because she got upset that some guy dressed in a dress walked into the locker room. I don't blame her. I'm sorry. But I've actually known people with all kinds of different levels of differentness. And guess what? I never pointed at them and said, "You're different. I'm going to ostracize you. You're different." And you know what? If you're that different, like growing up in the 80s, you aspired to be different. You didn't want to be part of the crowd. Now you're encouraged to be groomed as part of the crowd. In the 80s, I loved when people looked at me and went, oh. 'Cause that meant I got a reaction. I just don't got now. Everything is about tolerance and equality. You know what? What happened to fucking getting off your ass and working hard and gaining respect? How's that? That's how I did it. You don't deserve respect and equality just because you're somebody. When did that happen? Like everybody gets equality. No, you don't. You work your ass off and you gain it. That's how you learn to appreciate things. Well, don't get me started on this because that pisses me off. I hate the social fucking bullshit. Give me a holiday because I love women. I mean, that's great. I have lots of friends who are gay, lots, all throughout college and in my professional years. I have lots of friends who ended up being gay, and they're all still my friends. But guess what? None of my friends expect a fucking holiday to celebrate it. My friends don't go on TV making sure they rub it in your face. Do what you want to do. I don't have issues with that at all. But I don't need to know about it. I don't need to know about it in ad nauseum detail. And I don't need to like it. Do I? I don't need to think that you're equal. You don't need my stamp of approval to do your thing. Like, where did that ever become this big social issue now. Now you got Potok out there again, like a little freaking whack-a-mole. Bloop! Oh, it's hate crime. It's hate crime everywhere. Like, I need to go back to my brain study. Because this stuff, I get really upset over this stuff. People are just such a bunch of pussies today. That's all I can say. Buck up! Put away your baby blanket. Put away the tissues. You know, I don't know. I got bullied as a kid. And I learned to deal with it. I didn't have a big brother to go freaking stand up for me. So I had to deal with it myself, you know? I don't take no shit. I do take shit sometimes. I try to be nice, guys. You know me. But don't piss me off. Because there's just one little tiny line. And once that line's crossed, a few times you guys, I'm sure there's a few of you have seen me cross that line. But I try. But again, like I said, I don't give a shit, though, if you're different. It doesn't mean that people should be dropping flower petals on you, having a party. Being different is making you an individual. Being different and unique is making yourself. I see myself as a piece of art. That's the way I've always seen it. You know what? And I get to a point where I'm like, all right with it. But then I decide to touch it up a little bit, do a little bit more work, because maybe that part didn't turn out quite right. You know, but that's what we all should be. We're a work of art over a lifetime. Don't cry about it. Be bold about it. Go do something. Make a difference. Don't just stand there and whine about it. I don't want to hear it. So I only have one kid. As my dad always said, no excuses. So I don't want to hear it. All right, let's get back here. I don't know how we got so far off the topic. Researchers used blah, 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 blah. All right, let's go to the bottom. We've taken an important step toward learning how our aversion to inequity is influenced by our brain chemistry. So they're just going to give us dopamine, and we're all going to kumbaya smile, butt pat each other, French kiss each other, regardless of gender, sex, or sexual orientation, and be one big, happy, homogenized family. And this makes me very mad. Get us over our aversion to inequality. Get us over looking at the elites going, man, you fuckers have way too much money. We don't want to be manipulated by the rich bastards running the world. Nah, once they get rid of inequality, we'll be like, hey, that's cool. You're a rich dude. Like, what is the point of this research? To make us more compassionate. If we wouldn't have raised a society of psychopaths, we might not have to even look at this. All right, we've taken an important step toward learning how our aversion to inequality is influenced by our brain chemistry, said the first author of the paper, Ignacio Saez, in the release. Studies in the past decade have shed light on the neurocircuits that govern how we behave in social situations. What we show here is one brain switch we can affect. The whole ethical can of worms. That's what I've been saying about all this stuff. The ethical can of worms, the ethics which humans do not have, generally speaking. You know, if you put somebody in a room where they didn't think they were being watched at all, and there were two baskets on a table, and one had, I don't know, 10 delicious, I mean, how about a dozen delicious looking donuts? And the other one was empty.
and you told the person that was in the room, don't touch those. How many, and but you told them that there wasn't any cameras or anything. No one was ever going to see them. They were just in that room. How many people do you think wouldn't touch the donuts? Or if you had, I don't know, a basket of hundreds or something sitting on a table and you told them that there were no cameras, how many people do you think would grab one and slip it in their pocket? I'm not saying everybody, but I will guarantee you that there's a good number of people out there without a base set of ethics that would scam some stuff like that. Now, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, I wouldn't touch it. I know I wouldn't. Because I don't need your money and I don't need your fucking donuts. That's exactly why. And I've been like that my whole life. Ask my dad. You can't tell me shit. Don't do shit for me. Get away from me. I want to do it myself. And I've always been that way. It's caused me some major issues. Made my life probably a lot more difficult than it's needed to be. But hey, you know what? It makes you stronger. And I think it worked out better. I like to do things myself. But I'm just saying that the moral code is weak in this generation. That's for certain. These kids are taught to react to the dangling carrot. That dangling carrot is poison. I've said that before. The dangling carrot is partially rotten now, too. Don't fall for the dangling carrot. All right, anyway, this is a whole ethical can of worms that comes with changing a person's behavior chemically. And we can definitely think of a few people who would benefit from this drug. Yes, just not anyone that we know. And who knows? I mean, so one of these days, could they just, like, put this shit into our water? I heard, I think it was the guys, anti-media guys last night, Nick and DB and Manny. And they had a phone call, and I'm really glad that the caller called in. Sure sounded to me, though, like she had just started kind of waking up to things. And she was talking about fluoride in the water. And yeah, fluoride in the water is a really bad thing, which is why you avoid it as much as possible. But I remember a couple different stories. There's an area of Texas, and I don't quite remember the cities or where it was, but I know it was in central Texas somewhere, I believe, where the well water there, or the city water, the aquifer, actually has lithium in it. And you can do a search of Texas lithium and water. There was a bunch of research that was done showing, like, the incidences of crime, gunshots, that type of thing, were way down in the areas that were drinking this naturally occurring lithium in the water. That's the same place the crazy water comes from. I ordered myself a case of that crazy water out of Texas. It's the lowest pH you can get as far as alkalinity. And it's got a little bit of lithium in it. It doesn't make you feel kind of funky to drink that water. But it was kind of cool. Probably had radioactivity in it, too. I didn't even think of that. But After they had started studying that water and the effects on the people, there were questions as to whether or not they just should start slipping lithium into our water supply. And, you know, they got real quiet, too. And who would ever know? Who would ever freaking know? And, I mean, you got to figure anyway, you know, people are taking all these pharmaceutical drugs, going to the bathroom, water's going through the, you know, the processing plant. They can't filter out most of these drugs. You know, doing reverse osmosis, you can get some stuff out, but you're not going to get all the pharmaceuticals out. I know hormones and that, birth control pills, they're finding all that shit still in the water. And there's probably all kinds of stuff. I mean, I know that we've read, maybe not on this show, but I've read stories about different drugs showing up in the water. I mean, all we got to do is take a look at some of the crazy stuff that happens with even pesticides. I mean, that doesn't get filtered out of the water. They're finding Roundup everywhere, including the rain, mind you. I just saw that in the store the other day. It's coming down in the rain. It's stuck in the hydraulic cycle. So, you know, maybe you're not getting the lithium in the water, but like I was saying, if the pharmaceutical drugs are being not able to be filtered out properly out of the water system, somewhere along the way, I mean, all water is recycled. They're going to end up in the food chain or in the water chain that we then consume. But, you know, think about this. Now that they know, and now that they're cracking more and more secrets of the brain, well, you know, this new drug here, look, it makes us compassionate. It makes us giving. It makes you want to give me all your shit and to be nice and to not fight with us when we come marching into your town. That's all I can think of. All right, so then I ran across another story. And this was a study out of 2010, so it's been quite a while. But this is just some verification of stuff that we have known. Out of Time, Time Magazine, not Out of Time, but Out of Time Magazine. Under the heading of Brain, titled, Driven Toward Reward Without Regard for Consequences. An overactive dopamine reward system. Now, again, we're talking about dopamine. How interesting. I'm telling you, this is the dangling carrot part of the brain that they have learned to manipulate ad nauseum with not only video games, but with advertising. This is the key to manipulating the masses. This is what's made the masses a bunch of psychopaths and a bunch of instant gratification junkies. It is the section of the brain that causes addiction. An overactive dopamine reward system in the brain may help explain why psychopaths pursue rewards without regards for consequences, according to a new research published this week in the Journal of Nature Neuroscience. And yes, without consequences, like, I don't know, stealing things and not caring what's going to happen because you want that now. And I think it goes even beyond psychopaths. I mean, I think now the term psychopath is so loose. Like in the old days, you used to think of Bundy or, you know, you would think of some mass murderer and think that they were a psychopath. But now it's just so prevalent. It's like this. I mean, when I first met Dr. Simon and Michael Cross and started listening to their definitions of psychopathy and what it's like to deal with a person with those personality traits, I was like, holy shit, I know people just like that. Holy shit. And I mean, when you really start digging into it, you realize that there's a large majority of our population that all have those same traits, including most of them in charge. All right, previous research has found that individuals who suffer from antisocial personality disorder, often referred to as sociopaths or psychopathology, despite debate over whether or not these are distinct conditions, and I don't know, Dr. Simon has gone over the differences quite a number of times, and I think actually Michael's guest from this last week even did, the differences between a sociopath and a psychopath, and it has to do with empathy or the lack thereof. Says, despite the debate of whether or not these are distinct conditions, lack empathy and fear, yes. Yet this new study from researchers at Vanderbilt University examines what these individuals may have in excess. According to the study led by Joshua Buchholz, a graduate student in psychology at Vanderbilt, individuals with antisocial personality disorder traits show signs of dysfunction in dopamine reward systems, suggesting that in psychopaths, the drive toward reward can overwhelm all else. And that's what we've created. That's what happens in the lab rat, right? When you teach them a new maze, at the end of that maze, you have a treat. And that treat triggers dopamine production in the reward center when they get it. So the next time you put them in that maze, they go bloop directly down the path to get to the treat, regardless if there's a treat there or not, because that's where they got the reward. I mean, it's Pavlovian. Prior to participating in the two different experiments, study subjects completed personality tests to identify the presence and severity of psychopathic characteristics, including aggression, lack of empathy, and capacity for manipulation. And I'll tell you what, that manipulation is something that happens way more to us than we ever would have imagined. I mean, I see it now. And, you know, I don't know, when I was a kid, I was really good at figuring out how to get what I wanted. And really, I mean, I guess manipulation, you have to think about it this way. I always saw manipulation as a form of intelligence because you can outmaneuver your opponent by, you know, using the Stratego board. You got a goal and you got to figure out how to get there, and that person's in your way. So, you know, you follow the chain of command first. You find ways to get there, but I don't ever say no. I'm pretty bad like that. That's my thing. If I have a goal, and I got to be motivated, of course, and it's got to be for the right reasons. But if I have a goal, I don't give up if the first try I don't make it. If you can't go through the door, then go around the door. And if you can't go around the door, then go over the door. And if you can't go over the door, then go under the door. And if all else fails, get out an axe and hack the door down. You know, I mean, if it's that important to you, you'll find a way. Don't ever say no. There's never is a never. If it's that important to you, you will find a way to do it. So I'm not going to say, and I don't even think they're saying that manipulation is bad here. It's just at how you manipulate. And here's the base of all that. You need to have ethics as your base. So there's a line you won't cross. And I have those lines. Like I said, I go out of my way to try and do good. Not for selfish means. But many people in the society don't have that line. They don't have the filter. And it's all me, 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 me. And so moral judgment is out a window. And I mean, that's what they wanted. You know what? If we had morals, we'd be looking at what they're doing right now and screaming criminal to high heaven. But because we don't have morals basically anymore as a society, you know what? All the crooked backstabbing bullshit that's going on in Washington looks normal. All right, let's continue here. So prior to participating, they did personality tests and identified the severity of psychopathic characteristics, including aggression, empathy, capacity for manipulation, and other things. Drawing on previous research that had established a strong link between substance abuse and psychopathy, in the first experiment, researchers gave amounts of amphetamine. Like I told you, this is the addiction center. Cocaine also works on the center of the brain. Wow, what kind of an experiment is this? We're going to give you some amphetamines and stick you into an fMRI. And that's what they did, too. But you got to sit still. Don't move your nose. And you, when you're in an MRI, too, you can't move. So I bet this was pretty amusing. Drawing on previous research that has established a strong link between substance abuse and psychopathy, in the first experiment, researchers gave participants amphetamine and then used functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, brain scans to monitor how dopamine release was affected by the stimulant. In a second experiment, study participants were told that they would be paid. And this is, here we go, the dangling carrot. They will be paid for performing a simple task. And researchers conducted brain scans while they completed the test. That's like your job. The dangling carrot. You do that job because there's a promise at the end of the rainbow that you're going to get the money. I don't know if working ever gave me a fix of dopamine, but I'll tell you what, Friday afternoons when I saw my big fat paycheck, it did. I used to love Fridays. And I think, you know what? I think that that's what it is, as a matter of fact. Who would have thunk it? It is a reward center. When you get your paycheck, even if that money's in hand or not, you haven't bought anything with it or not, but you got that piece of paper with the digits on the end, and you can look at that, and you go, yeah, it's Friday. And it makes you feel great. That's what it is. That's pretty awesome. In both experiments, researchers found that participants who had psychopathic characteristics, according to personality tests, were more likely than those without traits to have greater activity in the nucleus accumbens, which is the area of the brain associated with dopamine reward processing, whether in response to a chemical stimulant or to a suggested monetary reward. The findings suggest that individuals with antisocial personality disorder may not be unaware or simply dismissive of the consequences, but instead that their intense reward-seeking motivation consumes their attention wholly until they have fulfilled their desire for reward. So we've made them reward junkies, dopamine junkies. And I'm telling you, the gaming, video games act on this exact same response system. So are video games turning our kids into psychopaths? Because by exactly what we just read in this article, that's exactly what it's saying, is that people with antisocial personality disorders, whether it be psychopathy or sociopathy, so whether they're sociopaths or psychopaths, they all seem to have this disorder, if you'd even call it that, this addiction to dopamine. And when you play video games, as you're blowing up arms and legs, as you're playing, what's it called? Grand Theft Auto. And you're stealing cars. You're producing dopamine. That's what happens, you know, when you start looking at the whole process of criminal behavior and some of the different dark triad traits and what that produces in the brain. It's the same chemicals, people. We are creating an entire generation with these games of psychopaths. It's kind of a scary thought, isn't it? All right. We are getting low on time, but there was another story. There's another. Well, not all games behave the same, no blood, but if you ever played first-person shooters, which is what the majority of the children like, I mean, even go to Wii. Go on your Wii and play like snowboarding, where you're on the whatever that board is called. I have one of those. You know the board that goes with the Wii, and you could do like downhill snowboarding. I mean, that's adrenaline and dopamine. You know, people. If you have a friend who's a psychopath, and I do, those people love thrills. Those people like risk-taking. Those people go out and do all the crazy stuff that you only wish you could do. And it's all about that dopamine addiction. Yes, Lone, nanobots are psychopathic. I absolutely agree. All right. Let's get down to, let me see now. There was another story about brain chemicals. Well, on top of all these discoveries now, they come out and announce that MIT, yes, that same MIT, the home of the nanobots and the whatever, Atlas robots, MIT researchers have developed a technology to create flexible, biocompatible electrodes for implanting into the brain or spinal column. And this article is titled, "Brain-Friendly Electrodes Can Pump Drugs to Neurons." It's not a coincidence now, is it? Actually, there's a if I can connect here, there is a little clippy. Too much of me talking this morning. I don't know if you can hear, but my allergies, now that spring has mini sprung, I can already feel my nasal passages being reduced in size and with breath. All right, I hope I don't have anything on in this machinery. Here we go. Yeah, I'm definitely feeling my nasal passages beginning to swell here. I'm sure by tomorrow I'll be dying. If we ever hit 50 degrees, I will believe that one when I see it. All right, hold on one second here. It's connecting. There we go. All right, this one comes with a little video. This is the new fibers to connect the brain to neurons to be able to give them drugs.
What is the Matrix? In the fiction world of the Matrix, one could learn fighting techniques or new languages in seconds just by plugging a cord into a brain.
Here we go.
Humanity is still far off from anything like that, but may have taken a first step into this direction thanks to
Igor is reporting
to a new development of the MIT, a device which allows to grasp the holy grail of science fiction, connecting one's brain to a computer.
Everyone's head has a brain in it, and so it seems like it's a very important important organ, but it's so complex that we have very little idea of what's actually going on the inside. We are creating a tool that is hopefully will allow us to start scratching the surface of that complexity. So in that sense, it is the holy grail of understanding how we as human beings function via those signals in our brain.
This new device looks a lot less sophisticated than what Hollywood has portrayed. In fact, its appearance could hardly be any simpler. This machine here is producing what to an outsider would look like a fishing line, but in fact, it's a revolutionary fiber which could be as thin as a human's hair while at the same time having up to 7 different channels in it.
The thick one is just how we start because it's more stable during the whole fabrication process. The thin one is what we actually use.
You have a little connection, and this is how the device looks. And then we plug it
that
in.
That part goes into the brain.
This
right?
part goes into the brain. The light goes into our device, which is goes directly into the brain.
And thanks to its multiple channels, can exchange information with the brain and even deliver medication to ill cells. And all of that simultaneously. It is potentially a game changer in neurology, as fibers are organic, flexible, and can suit anyone's head.
Electrodes implanted in the brain have been used to record information that allowed a paralyzed patient to control robotic arms, for example. So this is something that we would like to contribute to and have our devices be used so we can, for example, you know, help a Parkinson's patient be able to move better.
But can this new incredible development use for anything else, like mind control or uploading any skills into one's head? Professor Anikeva laughs off any such suggestions.
Can you, like, sort of program something into your
no,
person?
No, not at this point.
Yes, no, no, the KGB said I cannot tell you that.
At this point, by no means. Our brain is too sophisticated for us to be able to do something like that at this, and definitely not with the simplistic tools that we have right now.
MIT researchers acknowledge, despite the new invention seems like a major leap forward in brain studies, it may still take decades to develop the new interface into something more substantial.
Yeah, well, according to Kurzweil, it's well, assimilation is well underway. All right, so, yeah, they're actually these really thin, I don't know if they're even fiber optic, but they're, I heard them say they were organic, but these fibers, I know DARPA's been working on it for a long time, and they now are doing trials, I guess. So keep an eye out for that one. What caught my attention was the fact that now they can use them to deliver drugs directly to single neurons, which is somewhat disturbing. Okay, here, let me kill this echo. All right, we might actually get in two more stories. So here is one of the other ones that I wanted to jump on since we are still on the dopamine train. New study suggests, And this worries me because I do my flip-flops. Some days I go an entire week with very little sleep, and I definitely can see how it affects my personality at times. New study suggests night owls have psychopathic traits. Do you have the so-called dark triad of psychological traits? People who prefer to work and play at night may have evolved to possess the so-called dark triad of psychological traits, which is psychopathy, narcissism, and manipulativeness, says a new study. A new theory suggests that these two traits evolved together because darkness gives criminals and cheaters a way to hide from prying eyes of others, giving them an evolutionary advantage. Now, I don't know if I agree with the study necessarily. Like, I stay up late at times because I want to, but also out of necessity if I have lots of work to get done. And sometimes it is absolutely impossible to get anything of substance done during the day when I have family and endless chattering or interruptions going on. It just isn't conducive to getting a large volume of some complex stuff done. So late at night is when it works out all right for me sometimes. But I can definitely tell you when I have sleep deprivation, when I am staying up all night and I'm managing an hour or two of sleep and then getting up again at the real time when I'm supposed to get up, that starts to cause some definite issues. Sleep deprivation, absolutely. I can see it when it happens. And then I do like 3 nights of 12 hours of sleep when that starts happening. All right, anyway, let's continue. The three legs of the dark triad can be found everywhere in the world. Magazines have labeled entire generations as narcissists. Psychologists have created lists of professions most likely to attract psychopaths, and Machiavellian parents turn to the godfather of political manipulation for child-rearing advice. But psychologists say some people are walking around with this volatile cocktail of all three troubling traits. And that is because the dark triad may be an evolutionary adaptation. Possessing these traits gives some individuals a survival and reproductive advantage, studies have suggested. Well, it sure does. I'll tell you what. In the world of no rules, in the world of post-shit hit the fan, those three traits are going to be what gets you to survive. I hate to say it, but it's not going to be all nicey-nice, back-rubbing, butt-patting, Susie, can I borrow a cup of sugar? Okay, it's not. For as much as people might want to think it is, no, it's not. And for the more you can think about yourself, for the more that you can manipulate to get what you want, I mean, seriously, when you look at the criminal, what they consider the criminal mind. But like I said, I know lots of people with those traits. And maybe it is a criminal mind. You know, there's that fine line. If you don't have that moral line that you don't cross, then it's very easy to cross that fine line and to go to the other side. But if you got that moral line that you don't cross, then you can utilize that mindset. You can utilize the psychopathic traits to help you figure out a situation, and it also acts like laser vision because it allows you to see into the minds of people who do things that you don't. But I don't know. So whether or not this is a good or bad thing, I don't think in a moral society, though, a society where we're trying to get along and follow rules, psychopaths don't work out too well. They get pissed off and then they just dump the chessboard over and say, I won. Fuck you, you're a loser. That's what happens. I'm in charge. That's how the game ends. This game is stupid. Anyway, so psychologists say some people are walking around with a volatile cocktail of all three troubling traits because the dark triad may be an evolutionary adaptation. Possessing these traits give individuals a survival and reproductive advantage, studies have suggested. So like I said, in a shit at the fan scenario, I could definitely see. But and even, you know, I've looked at some studies looking at people in power and business and stuff, and most of them all have that dark trait as well, which is how you manipulate your way in business. I mean, I can definitely see it. All right, so we continue. Sleep cycles and personality. Psychologists have also found that the natural sleeping and waking patterns of individuals called chronotypes carry other traits along with them. These chronotypes are largely determined by genetics and regulate the time of day that we prefer to sleep and when we feel most awake, intelligent, and alert. Night owls feel their smartest, most creative, and most productive in the evening or in night hours, much later than early risers. And I've never been an early riser, mind you. And I do. Like, after 10 p.m., that's when I start to get real creative. But I'm not a psychopath. I only play one on TV. On the other hand, I don't know. I think I could be if I let myself be, but I don't cross that line, so... I'm only a psychopath if you push me to it. So don't push me to it. I don't go there. On the other hand, night owls can be very extroverted, extremely charming, and even deceptive. They have stronger individualistic tendencies and are less agreeable than their early-to-bed peers. Many night owls have certain evolutionary advantages that increase mating success and show increased impulsivity and risk-taking behavior. Absolutely. Such features of the night may facilitate risk-taking that are linked to the dark triad. A paper said in September of 2013 in Personality and Individual Differences. Next section, cops versus robbers. The researchers believe there is an evolutionary arms race between cheaters, those who engage. I call them the usurpers. And actually, I used to have another name for them. I'm trying to remember. It's the same people who used to sit behind me in high school and cheat off me. The ones who never do it themselves. They just wait until you do it, and then they take all your shit and then claim that they did it. Oh, why do they have a name? There's a lot of people in the alternative media movement like that. And I'm trying to remember because I had a name for them all. The researchers believe there is an evolutionary arms race between cheaters, those who engage in casual sex, crime, and other risky behavior, and those who like to punish them. As a result, people with the dark triad might also have evolved to prefer the hours of the day when the light is low, and fewer people are awake to catch them cheating or stealing. Well, hey, darkness helps. Dark alleys. You ever hear that one? So essentially, early risers are the cops. Night owls are the robbers. Maybe. And I don't even know. I mean, this story is assuming that cops are good guys. So I guess I'd call a little bit of bullshit on that one. Maybe it would have been easier to say people with morals and people who will do whatever it takes to get what they want. And those who have a safety that stops them from pursuing things until they have enough money to buy it or until they've grown it themselves to have it themselves. Anticipation, not instant gratification. The survey, there was a test. The survey asked participants, there were 263 volunteers, how much they agree with statements like, I have a natural talent for influencing people, which is a sign of narcissism. I enjoy driving at high speeds. Or, I think I can beat a lie detector test, which is a sign of psychopathy. And it is hard to get ahead without cutting corners here and there, which is a sign of Machiavellianism. That's about every profit-grubbing corporation in America. Consistently, the researchers found that people who stay up later at night scored higher on each of the dark triad of personality traits than their early-to-bed peers. The study has one important limitation the scientists admit. Most of their subjects were college students who stay up later to fit the lifestyle and demands of student life. Still, they concluded the study by saying those high on the dark triad traits, like many other predators, lions, African hunting dogs, and scorpions, well, I like the way they equate those, are creatures of the night. So, I mean, I don't know. I could see how maybe they can make those associations. I don't know if everyone who stays up late at night is a psychopath, though. I do know some people. I do know how lack of sleep can turn you into a psychopath as well. So whether or not it's the chicken or the egg, who knows? But I just wanted to share that because I thought it was an interesting little story. All right, let's end this up here. Mammoth step forward. Scientists splice woolly DNA into elephant cells. Yes, Jurassic Park is back, people. You knew it was coming. Scientists at Harvard University, oh God, MIT and Harvard, the pit of the demons, are one step closer to bringing woolly mammoths back to life after successfully inserting some sequences of the mammoth DNA into the elephant genome. This study is yet to be published, though, as there is still work to do. No recreation of the Ice Age would be complete without a large, shaggy, woolly mammoth stumping around on the frozen tundra. This is what George Church, a professor of genetics at Harvard University, and his team ultimately hope to achieve once more. Oh, this is disturbing. The woolly mammoth was one of the last of the line of the species that emerged from the early Pliocene age some 2.5 million years ago and almost completely died 10,000 years ago. Some mammoths, however, have continued to survive on Wangli Island in the Arctic Ocean between the Chukchi Sea and the East Siberian Sea until about 3,300 years ago. These were the specimens which researchers are using for their DNA analysis. All right, guys, well, we got about 30 seconds left. So, yes, they're going to bring back the woolly mammoth. I want to talk tomorrow. Ebola has made a full-out resurgence now in Sierra Leone, and so has a more dangerous bird flu. Line them right up because vaccines are coming, people. That's what it's all about. Well, get excited because it's Tuesday. Tuesday's always a fun night. Mr. Kevin Blanche should be up next. And then at 6 p.m., we have Mr. Chuck O'Celli live. This is a new tune, by the way. Mr. JJ Inc. Recall at 8. Private time with Michael and Nick. Pepper Chicks After Dark and Intermedia.